Thanks, Tim. I want to share from Matthew 5, a familiar passage for most of us, but it was, I guess when I read through it this week, I was sort of reflecting on, do I see things the way God sees them? And I just, as I read through some of these things that I've read before, I can say that I felt like maybe God was helping just to get a little more clarity, see things a little bit more the way he sees them. It's sobering, it's challenging, but I think it's also good. So start in Matthew 5, verse 21, and we'll see how far I get. I'm probably going to do 15 minutes, max 20, just because I know just so you kind of have context for the plan. You start in Matthew 5, verse 21, and in the remainder of the chapter, there's another 27 verses. Jesus is giving instruction about how we're to live. And he talks about various different aspects of our lives and aspects of how he wants his disciples to live. He just preceded this by saying that our righteousness, the righteousness of his disciples, needs to surpass that of the scribes and Pharisees. And the scribes and Pharisees, we know it, they were considered the most righteous people of the time. If anyone was sort of walking around and said, who's the most righteous guy in town? Well, you'd point to the scribe or the Pharisee. You'd say, that's him. And Jesus is saying, well, actually, my disciples, your righteousness actually needs to exceed it. And I'm going to say, as we go through some of these, you have to exceed it such that the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees almost doesn't even look like righteousness. The bar that Jesus is calling his disciples to is so much higher. Now, he gives his Holy Spirit. He empowers his disciples to live that way. It's not something we can do on our own, but what I was, I guess, reflecting on was just the way, where that calling is and how God sees some of these things. So I thought the first thing was interesting. I'll start in verse 21. And in these various areas that Jesus talks about, the first thing he talks about is anger. I can see in my life, I'm going to get to the second section, which is on lust. I can see in my walk with the Lord, lust and its various forms and the way it ensnares us in sin was, to me, when I came to the Lord, it was obvious. It was despicable. And even though I was a slave, and even before I came to the Lord, I can say, even though I was a slave to various aspects of lust, I still knew inside it felt dirty. It felt like, man, this is evil. This is wrong. Man, God forgive me, but I know I was going to do it again. That was my life. But that's not where Jesus starts. The point I wanted to raise is that's actually not where Jesus starts. And whether there we can take anything from that, I can say I did. When Jesus started, he actually started with anger. He didn't start with lust. He started with anger. And he said in verse 21, you've heard the ancients were told, you shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And whoever says to his brother, you good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever says, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. And I don't think anything I'm going to say here is radically not, it's just obvious it's here. But I guess what I would say is it was just kind of coming home to me in verse 22. What Jesus is saying and warning us is that if we can't control our anger, if we don't allow him to change us and bring this anger that is in all of us, some battle with it more and others less, but if we go through our life where our mouths are a funnel for that anger, and there's a spectrum, where you can just be angry in your heart, another where it starts to come out of your mouth and says you're good for nothing, and ultimately where it comes out of your mouth with strong condemning words that just categorize a person with, I don't know, you call somebody a fool, like that's coming from deep inside of you. Jesus says those words coming out of your mouth will send you to hell. You will end up in hell because of these words. And I just think about that. We can go through our lives. I can think about it in the last 2 weeks. I'm ashamed to say it, but I was in an argument and my words were not in control. My words were not in control, and I wasn't cursing or swearing, but the anger was ruling in my tongue at that moment. And I very promptly repented and apologized to the person and repented to the Lord and asked that it never happen again. But I'm ashamed to say that happened. But I would say, do I take this seriously? Like, do I take that seriously that those words can actually take me to hell? Because I was reading this going, I don't know, like you can justify it, right? Like it's all about the other person and what they did and the circumstances and our nature and the way I was raised or all these different things. Jesus doesn't say any of that. He just warns people and says, listen, in the Old Testament, you were warned, the Pharisees' righteousness says don't commit murder. I would go a step further. The Pharisees' righteousness may say don't hit somebody or don't lash out in anger, don't beat somebody up, don't have violence. Jesus says my righteousness and the righteousness that everyone is going to be judged by. This is not just for his disciples. Jesus is giving us a foreshadowing of what it's going to look like on that judgment day when he comes again and we all stand before God at the judgment seat and give account for our lives. He's saying that the words out of your mouth will judge you. And if unrepented of, if you live a life where your words are just, where anger rules, it'll take you to hell. And I don't know, I was sobered by that. And I was sobered by that. Partially I gave the example, or talked a little bit about lust at the beginning, because I just see in my own walk, you can almost justify anger. You can make excuses. But you read this, I think one of the points of this is to help us stop making excuses and take it seriously. And say, God, I need you to change me in this area. I see it. And I need to be changed. And like, to get desperate. Because if we truly believe this, and if we know in our lives, if we know that anger has a root in our heart, and there's circumstances where we get triggered, to use a modern word, and can't control it, the goal of what I would hope comes out of this for you today is twofold. A, to see it the way God sees it, but to get desperate and say, God, help me. Because if we're desperate, I promise you, we will find help. He will deliver us. But he wants us to be desperate. He wants us to take it seriously and have that desire to be changed. Because if you just justify it like a Pharisee, it leaves you in a dangerous place. Then it says, therefore, if you're presenting your offering at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go and first be reconciled to your brother and then come and present your offering. I think it's obvious, but what Jesus is saying, like, listen, in your worship of me, in your worship of God, it's actually a higher priority to me that you be reconciled. That if your anger has gotten the better of you, if your anger is there and you've hurt someone, it's actually better that, like, don't worry about coming and worshiping me. What you need to make your priority is getting right with that person you've hurt. That needs to be the priority for me, because in just like the way man sees it, like we can like have all these other priorities of how we look on the outside. And Jesus says, no, like your priority needs to be getting right with that person. Don't worry about all the other stuff. Don't worry about coming to church and raising your hands and seeing all these other things that could maybe give an outward appearance of being good and right with God. God says, no, go get right with that person you've hurt. Make that your priority. And then I'm going to just share a little bit on 25 and 26. I don't have full clarity, but make friends quickly with your opponent at law while you're with him on the way, so that your opponent may not hand you over to the judge and the judge to the officer and you be thrown into prison. Truly I say to you, you will not come out of there until you have paid every last cent. I've heard lots of different interpretations on this, and there are probably some that were maybe even more insightful than what I was going to say, but I can tell you what I read on this. I'm a businessman, and I work in a business, and we have to deal with things. You have to deal with sometimes people not doing things right, and sometimes there has to be lawyers involved because there is justice and laws that need to be followed. But what I read on this is that Jesus holds us who have been given this responsibility still to an account. It's not like all the other verses about anger apply to interpersonal relationships with spouses and stuff and other things. I read this and I said part of it at the start, switching gears here slightly, part of this when I read through all this was seeing things God's way. And I could say when I read this, it was sobering again. It was like, you know what, God? just the same way I've been sobered about my interpersonal relationships and having anger there, I read this and go, you know what, God? I want to take this seriously. I don't want to end up in a place where somehow I've justified it, and because maybe somebody's doing something slightly wrong and we're getting in a business into a legal battle or something. I just, you know what? Even in that, God, you're calling me to live in such a way that is not allowing anger or somehow vindictive or other things to have a place in my life. His disciples and his righteousness. Because I think what it's saying is you can always justify yourself about why you're right. And I think the warning here at the end is you may not be right in God's eyes. In all your righteousness and all the ways you think you're doing the right thing and dragging some person into court, you better watch out, because in all of it, you may not be right in God's eyes. And part of it may just be because God wanted you to forgive. God was not calling you in this case to be the judge. He would deal with those persons. And in all of this, you can't take it too far. I have to steward other people's money, and I want to do a good job of that. But I think there is a warning here. I'll go so far as to say that. There is a warning here that even in business and other things where you might end up in court battles, just because you can stand before a judge and feel like you're right, you better watch out, because in God's eyes, you may be still falling short of his standard of righteousness in this area. So then the next section here is on lust. Verse 27, you've heard that it is said, you should not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye makes you stumble, tear it out and throw it from you, for it is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand makes you stumble, cut it off and throw it from you, for it is better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. And I think this is self-evident, what it's saying here, warning us about lust and warning us about sexual sin that we can entertain with our eyes, or sexual sins that can happen through other with our hands and other things. It's warning us that these things can take us to hell. But I could say, I was already thinking about this example, and don't take this the wrong way, but I was even thinking, because I was already planning on sharing this a little bit, but what Ben shared and his eye and it getting injured. And I was like, yeah, that is, like, let's pray about that. I wouldn't want my eye to be foggy either. But I was thinking about this. Imagine if one of the young men here or any of the adults actually got an injury where like a nail went right into their eye. Like your eye is like destroyed. Like the eye, like I'm telling you, we as a church would be praying. We'd be like, man, like let's do what we can to help out. This is horrible. Or imagine somebody who works with their hands, maybe a woodworker or something like that, because that's what most people did back in these times. Imagine your right hand, like the hand that was your primary hand for working. Like Tim broke his arm and it's a hassle for typing. But imagine if your actual, like, you're a carpenter and your right hand is cut off. Like, this would be a catastrophe. Like, we would all be deeply troubled and concerned about this, and everyone would be praying, and it's a good thing to pray about that because it would be totally life-changing. But Jesus is saying, you know what? It's actually better for you if in somehow, some way, you lost your eye or you lost your hand that you can do your work with and make your living. It's better for you to lose that than be a slave to lust. It's better for you, like Jesus says, in the long run, it will be better for you if that were to happen than to be a slave of lust. And I just think, like I said, seeing things God way, like that is sobering. That is sobering to think that way, because when you actually apply it that way, because right now it's very easy to brush off and take lust lightly and let little things into our eyes, because it's everywhere. For us men, if you're actually on guard with this, it's everywhere. Lustful images, they're everywhere, and it can slip into our eyes. And Jesus says, like I was thinking about that, when we stand before him at the judgment day, there's a warning that we might be better off not even having an eye than letting those things come in and ensnare our heart and bring us into bondage to lust that will actually end ultimately take us to hell. That's the warning, that there is a judgment coming. There is a warning that there are things all around us that the enemy wants to ensnare us with. And if we're not sober, if we're not on guard, if we're not desperate for Jesus to help us, because in all of these things, the answer is, if you are battling with lust, is the answer to gouge your eye out or physically cut your hand off? Is that the answer? We all know that's not the answer. But the answer is to be desperate. Just like if Ben's eye was shot out with a nail, or Tim's hand was actually cut off for some reason, like, and I'm sorry, I'm not accusing you, like, I don't, maybe it's a bad idea for me using names of this because it's a serious topic, but I'm just giving examples to make it real. If any of us, if my hand was cut off for some situation, I would be desperate. If there was a chance the doctor could somehow fix it, I would be desperate to have the doctor fix it. Yeah, do whatever it takes to try and repair this hand and give it back to me, or repair my eye so I don't go through the rest of my life blind. I would be desperate for that. And Jesus says, no, what you really, and that's fine, but what we really ultimately need to be desperate about is, God, help me overcome lust. Help me as a man to completely and utterly have lust put to death in my life, that it has zero stranglehold, zero grip on my life, that I am free by the power of God from this lust. That's the way God sees it. That's the way God sees it, and that's the way I want to see it, because it'll help me to have God's priority on this life, not to take sin lightly, not to just go through this life making excuses, but rather go for this life saying, God, your promises are true. I know you can help me, but I am serious about this, and I want you to help me. I need you to help me. I see it in some measure the same way you see it, God, and because I see it your way, I am desperate. I want your help. Just read a couple more. It was said, whoever sends his wife away, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife, except for the reason of unchastity, makes her commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. And there's two things I took from this. It says that God, when a husband and wife comes together, God joins them. When we make that commitment is for life. And another thing I was thinking about as I read this is, like, I believe that not many here would make this, but I think it is common in the world today. There's many people in the world today who, when they're in a marriage relationship, would stand up and say, no, I would never commit adultery on my spouse. And it's probably true. They probably would never commit adultery with their spouse. They would just say, like, that is, in my heart, that is horrible, and I would never do that. But then the divorce comes, and they end up remarried to someone else. And now I would never commit adultery with this new person I'm with. Like, that's not the way God sees it. God said, listen, that I see it the same way. You've justified it. You've made this excuse as to why it's okay now and why everything's just had to be that way. And it was, in the end, it's just how it worked out, God. Well, God says, no. God says, no, I joined you together. And that separation and remarriage, I see that as adultery. The same way you thought it was so objectionable when you were married to someone, God says it's still adultery. And I don't say that to put a yoke on anyone. And I know there's lots of messes and eggs that are scrambled that you can't unscramble. But I am saying, this is how God sees it. This is how God sees it. And if we can walk away with that, and we can walk away with that soberness, saying, this is how God sees my marriage. This is how God sees the commitment of marriage. I think that helps us. I think that helps us to have his perspective as we walk through this life. And that soberness and that aspect of God, like, it's serious. Like, it says, like, the last verse in the chapter, therefore you are to be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. God wants us to understand his view on sin. He wants us to understand his view on righteousness, and he is calling us to live that way. And I think to the extent we can understand these things and have that soberness to read these things and see it with God's eyes, I think it helps us. And for the sake of time, I'm going to stop, but read the next section. Read the next section and think about keeping our word, because that's the next section. It talks about oaths and different things that can be kind of confusing. But what it's ultimately talking about is keeping our word. God values that. His disciples are to be rock solid. When they say something and make a commitment, your yes is to be yes. And it is to be a testimony in this world where yeses get murky and black becomes white and little gray. And like, no, it's black and white. Your word is your word. And that's how Jesus says his disciples are to live. Again, it's like that's a righteousness that God prioritizes. And that's one of the things that Jesus brought up amongst others in this section. So I said it before that I don't say this to put a yoke on anyone. But I do think it is good to see these things God's way. If it can give us a sober fear about the way the enemy wants to ensnare us in these things and help us steer clear of these temptations and traps. Or if we find ourselves in any of these things, like I confess, I already said it. I lost control of my words. I read these things and I want to be desperate to say, God, help me. I do not want that in my life. I want to take it seriously. That I know I've lived a good path and you've done a good work in my life. But if I let this rule in my life, if I don't take this seriously, despite all that's happened and everywhere you've brought me to, God, this could take me to hell. I don't want to say I'm exempt from that because the Lord has done a good work in my life for the last 20 years. What he says is anger, in his view, uncontrolled, our words can take us to hell. And we need to take that seriously and let it bring about a cry in our hearts that says, God, help me. Deliver me. Lust. God, help me. Delivery. Troubles in our marriages. Keeping our word. God, help me have your righteousness. Change me and make me like you. Change me, God. Help me.